You're listening to the Restoration Church Podcast, and guess what? We are finally gathering once again at full capacity at the Lyric Theater, and you can find out everything you need to know at restorationlex.com/this week. You can give, you can fill out a Connect card, find out about safety guidelines, home churches, and follow along on our worship guide, whether you're joining us in person or on the live stream. However or whenever you are joining us, we are so grateful that you are. So let's jump into this week's message. Here we go.
We're in a series this summer. We're calling it How to Love. And we've been calling that if you've been watching or listening and been here. Because in Matthew 22, this is what Jesus says is the center of our faith. He says, it's love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. In other words, if you strip back everything in the scriptures, if you strip back everything in Christianity, it comes down to this, loving God and loving neighbor. So in essentially discipleship, what we are passionate about, if you boil it down to the bottom, discipleship is learning how to love. Learning how to love better. So these last 3 weeks, we've been talking about this, and we're moving forward and love the Lord your God with all your heart. That's where we were last week. This week is love the Lord your God with all your soul. Last week with hearts. Our hearts are the seat of our wants and desires and longings and emotions. Our hearts are really the center of who we are. And so loving God with all our heart, as we said, is a matter of our worship and being honest as we gather in a room like this that we have lesser loves. We have things that pull for the affection of our hearts week in and week out. And the reason we gather in a space like this is because our hearts, like compasses, can lose their sense of true north all week long. In this moment, these gatherings are an opportunity to say, together, Lord, we want to be recalibrated, remagnetized towards you as true north. That's what we do when we gather here. And this is to help us as we gather to love God together. So now this week, we come to love God with all of our souls. And soul's kind of hard to define, right? Soul, we might think, is a disembodied spirit that lives inside us or something like that. And that's probably close to what you would define soul, what our culture defines a soul being. But as we see in the scriptures, the way they understood soul in the time of Jesus was very, very, very different from how we understand soul. Deuteronomy 6:5, which is where Jesus is quoting from in Matthew 22, says, love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul. And that word soul is this word nephesh. And nephesh, it kind of literally means throat, which is strange. So love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your throat. And that's not a mistake, because in the ancient world, it was the idea that this is the place of our breath. This is our life. It's our whole essence. In other words, our nephesh isn't just our spirit. Our nephesh is our body and our spirit. This is not a disembodied reality. In fact, we don't have a soul. Biblically, we are a soul. That's who we are. And that might seem strange to you, because we've been formed by this idea that our souls, our spirits are separate from our bodies and this different realities. Our soul being this immortal spirit that lives forever, and then our body being this sort of temporary shell that we hopefully discard at death to go into the sweet by and by. I mean, I don't know how many hymns I sang growing up that were about getting out of my horrible, ugly, dead body and getting to heaven. That's like half the hymns out there. But this idea, it did not come from the Bible. I want you to know that. It came from the Greeks, actually. There's a couple of schools of thought within this. First is the idea of Platonic dualism. I know we're getting a little academic here. And this idea, it originated with Plato, and it's that essentially our bodies are prisons that we must escape. And that's widely taught in the time of Jesus. And honestly, if you look at it, it's kind of widely taught now. And then there is sort of the religious form of this, which was something called Gnosticism. And Gnosticism was one of the primary heresies in the early church that they were facing. And they took the idea of this dualism and they spiritualized it around Christianity. They saw the physical world as sinful, And Jesus was just a spirit. Jesus was just a spirit because the flesh, remember, the flesh is dirty and gross. And we need to escape it. So Jesus surely wouldn't come as a man. He must have come just as a spirit and tricked us. And the goal then, in that understanding of Christianity, is to transcend the physical world, to transcend our experience here in this life. And they always talk about it being a secret knowledge or a higher knowledge that you can attain if you just try hard enough. So listen, if you ever hear stuff like that, if you hear the separation of body and soul, and especially if you hear people telling you that this is a secret idea, an idea that we need to get higher than everyone else, let me tell you right now, run, because that's heresy. It's straight up heresy. Red flags all around. And that's because the Bible is actually teaching that our physical bodies are so much different. The Bible is telling us that both our bodies and our spirits are a reflection of the image of God. Not just what's on the inside being a reflection of the image of God, but God giving us a body that also reflects the image of God. He didn't just create spirits to inhabit the earth. He created these living human beings, living beings who inhabited earth as his image bearers. It says in Genesis 1:31 that God saw all that he made, and it was very good. He said that after making our physical bodies. And that's foundational for us to understand that when we look at our physical bodies, we're not looking at something that God has condemned and called evil. He called it good. From the beginning, they were a part of his good creation. And what God calls good, I want to call good too, right? I want to call good too. But then we see in Genesis 3, obviously, there's sin and there's death, and it's brought into all creation. It's brought into our whole being. Sin impacts not just us inwardly. In the same way, it affects our bodies as well. God tells Adam in Genesis 3 that cursed is the ground because of you. Through painful toil, you will eat food from it all the days of your life. It will produce thorns and thistles for you, and you will eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your brow, you will eat your food until you return to the ground, since from it you were taken. From dust you are, and to dust you will return. So not only did sin fracture our relationship with God spiritually, we know, we see that sin brought death. Sin brought things like cancer. Sin brought things like disease and sorrow and division, things that impact our physical reality. It introduced our world to death and disease and sorrow. And when we look out and we see those things, they're not a natural part of life. They were not meant to be part of our existence as image bearers. This is not the way it's supposed to be. I've said this at funerals a lot. I hear this taught by preachers all the time. It says just death is a natural part of life. And that's a lie. Because Genesis 1 tells me that God created us for a reality where there is no death. Where there is no sorrow, there is no disease. We are experiencing right now the fruit of something that we were not created for. Which leads us then to something we cannot miss too, that God wanted to redeem our broken creation. He didn't want us to just come as spiritual beings and go into the ground. He did not come as a spirit. He did not come as a secret knowledge. He did not come as a book of ideas. Jesus was God embodied. God took on a body. And if God took on a body, our body matters. Amen? Our body matters. John 1:14, the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. Took on flesh. Hebrews 2:17 says, for this reason, he had to be made like them, fully human in every way, in order that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in service to God, and that he might make atonement for the sins of his people. You want to know something crazy? Jesus is reigning in heaven right now in a resurrected physical body. That's mind-blowing. God is so about our redemption of the whole person, not just our spirits, but our bodies, that he has sent Jesus ahead, not as a spirit in heaven. He is in the resurrected body that we too will one day have. This is huge. Jesus did not come just to save our disembodied souls. Jesus sacrificed, redeems our whole selves, our whole life, our body, our spirit, our soul. The New Testament, it talks about our ultimate future not being where we go off in the sweet by and by, floating around but like some sort of angels and stuff like that. No, our future, according to the scriptures, is too embodied. Romans 8 says, we know that the whole creation has been groaning as in the pains of childbirth right up until the present time. Not only so, but we ourselves who have the first fruits of the Spirit groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for the adoption to sonship. And listen to these words, the redemption of what? Our bodies. Central to the hope of the gospel is the redemption of our bodies. Can you see how sometimes our language around salvation can sound more like Plato than it does Jesus? Can sound more like Greek philosophy than it does the scriptures themselves? Because our ultimate hope is an embodied future. 1 Corinthians 15 tells us that for the trumpet will sound, the dead will be raised imperishable, and we will be changed. For the perishable must clothe itself with the imperishable, and the mortal with immortality. When the perishable has been clothed with the imperishable, and the mortal with the immortality, then the saying that is written will come true. Death has been swallowed up in victory. Friends, if you look at the last page of the Bible, the last page of the Bible tells a story of us living a physical reality with God. In the new heavens and the new earth, which means this impacts the way we understand our lives with God right now, in the in-between, in the already and the not yet. Our spiritual lives then, now, because of our ultimate future being an embodied reality, it means that our bodies matter in the here and the now. Our spiritual lives, they are a testament within our physical bodies for what we believe about the future. Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 6 these words about our bodies. And I must say, these words may be the most countercultural words in the scriptures in American society, what I'm about to read, and you're going to see why. Paul writes this in 1 Corinthians 6. Do you not know that your bodies are temples of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have received from God? Listen to these five words. You are not your own. You are not your own. You were bought at a price. Therefore, honor God with your bodies. This is redemption language. The cross has redeemed us from slavery to sin and to death. And those five words, you are not your own, speaks so powerfully to the idea that we can somehow be spiritual and yet our bodies can be used however they like. This is a fundamentally American idea. Not only is it the mindset that fuels our individual sin, but it's the engine that has ran systematic sin in our country's history. Yesterday, on Juneteenth, we celebrated the emancipation of slaves in the United States. And we look back at a history of people claiming to be Christians who upheld hundreds and hundreds of years of slavery and racial terror because they believed that the soul and the body were separate realities. I want you to listen to these words. This is from something they were asking enslaved men and women. When they wanted to come to faith in Jesus, when they wanted to be baptized, they made enslaved people say these words. Look on the screen. You declare in the presence of God and before this congregation that you do not ask for the holy baptism out of any design to free yourself from the duty, head, and obedience you owe to your master while you live, but merely for the good of your soul and to partake of the grace and blessing promised to the members of the Church of Jesus Christ. A slave master religion is saying, Jesus can have your soul, but I have your body. I would put forth that maybe the original sin of our country is founded upon this belief that our spirits matter, but our bodies don't. And some of the biggest problems we are facing in our country right now, still, is that our spirits matter, but our bodies don't. The people who look like us, don't think like us, don't vote like us, they're created in the image of God. We cannot miss this. We cannot miss this. But because of what Jesus has done, because of the work of Christ, our body, our spirit, our soul, they belong to Jesus. And our calling is to declare that the lives that surround us, no matter what they look like, no matter what they think like or vote like, they are made in the image of God, and we're not on earth just to save their souls and say their bodies don't matter. They do. Their physical life on this earth matters because they've been made in the image of God, to be redeemed in the image of God, that their spiritual life and their physical life are inseparable. Their nefesh is right in front of their eyes, their throats, their whole person. And because we value the value of the image of God in them and in us, we have a completely different ethic in the way we treat people, not only who think like us, but people who do not think like us. That's why, and Paul writes this in Romans 12, therefore I urge you, brothers and sisters, you probably know these words, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Notice he doesn't say, in view of God's mercy, in view of the cross, offer your beliefs, offer your mind, offer your doctrine, offer your intellect. He says, in view of what Jesus has done on the cross, he says to offer your bodies, not just your spiritual world, your physical world. It is an act of worship. Paul could have said in so many words, if you believe in the cross, if you believe in what Jesus has done, then just say that and believe that and you are good. But that is to present Plato's gospel and not Jesus' gospel. The response we are called to in light of Jesus' work on the cross is that we are called to an embodied faith, a faith that is irreducibly embodied, irreducibly our whole selves, not just in our hearts, but in our hearts moving outward into our bodies day in and day out. So, in light of what we're talking about here in this series, how to love, how do we love God with our bodies, our whole selves? We need practices together that shape our physical lives in response to God. One of the statements that has been foundational for our understanding of discipleship around here in our church is this statement by Henry Nouwen. He says, you don't think your way into a new kind of living. You live your way into a new kind of thinking. In other words, change doesn't happen just when we require new information and keep piling on the good spiritual goods. And eventually, if we keep cramming Bible and cramming ideas into our brain, then we'll change. No. Sometimes our physical life can form our spiritual life as much, if not more, than the other way around. It is the consistent practices that we do day in and day out, week in and week out, year in and year out, that change our inward lives over time. It's why we gather weekly and not occasionally, because what we do here is formational, not just to our spirits, but to our bodies. Think about how hard it was to begin to get up and go to church again after 56 weeks of not doing it. Why? It's not because you didn't love church. It's because after you have spent 56 weeks in a completely different physical pattern in your life, you're being brought into a new rhythm that you were not in before. It's not because your mind or your spirit was wrong. It's because your spiritual life and your physical life are inseparable. And sometimes it's our bodies that lead our hearts. So together we need practices as a church. We need spiritual disciplines that help us move our lives towards Jesus. Not just ideas, not just information, even though that's good. I love theology, I love doctrine, I love all those things, but we need practices. Spiritual disciplines, maybe you've heard of those before, things like prayer and fasting and worship, all these things. I know when I first started hearing about them, it just seemed like the advanced Christianity, like 301, like that I haven't passed the lower ones, so I'm not going to be able to do the spiritual disciplines yet. It seemed like something that was inapproachable for me, but all spiritual disciplines are ways that we learn how to love. Continual physical practices that help us learn to love God and love our neighbor. And we need physical practices like fasting, like silence, like solitude, like, I will say, community. Being with other people is a spiritual discipline. Being in our home churches is a spiritual discipline. Listen, sometimes you don't feel like going, right? I can tell you, I'm pastor of this freaking church, and there's many times at 5:15, 45 minutes before group, I'm like, God, I just want to go lay at home. But I know I need my body to lead my mind and my spirit. So I move it there. So we need these practices because we can believe all the right things all year long, all day long, but until our faith is embodied, until it is at work in us day in and day out, we're not going to see the change that we need. And so I felt led today just to close by emphasizing one particular physical practice, spiritual practice that I believe that we all need in this season desperately. Over the last year, our rhythms of work and rest have been exploded, right? Absolutely exploded. Either you have worked so hard in so many different ways that you did not before and you're exhausted, or maybe you're like me and were working from home, and so the space of work and rest basically became one, and it was so hard to differentiate between where I'm resting and when I'm working, and Sabbath was almost impossible, it felt like. But that, I believe, is the practice that we desperately need right now in this moment, is the practice of rest, of Sabbath, of taking a moment and saying, I am not producing today because, God, you are enough. Stopping and reasserting these habits of work and rest. I think a lot of the times when I'm too tired to do things in community, I'm too tired to do things around a church, it's not because I don't want to in here. It's because I've not rested myself, and I'm weary myself, and I don't feel like I have enough to give anybody else around me, and it starts with my commitment to rest. Walter Brueggemann, he's written so much on Sabbath. He says that Sabbath is not simply a pause. It is an occasion for reimagining all social life away from coercion and competition to compassionate solidarity. Sabbath is not simply the pause that refreshes. It is the pause that transforms. I believe in this season what we desperately need is the continual rhythm of learning to say, God, I will stop because I know you are enough. I will reestablish the rhythm of rest and renewal that I desperately need so I can have in my tank the love that I need to love you, to love other people. I imagine today, I know a lot of us are weary right now. I've been talking to many of you working through the outward expression of what you're dealing with in this season as the anxiety comes to the surface. In some ways, it's coming out as anger. In some ways, it's coming out as grief. In some ways, it's coming out as distance and running far away from God and from everyone else.